670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That's one of my all-time favorite hip-hop records, Ain't No Half-Steppin' by Big Daddy Kane. Big Daddy Kane, 57 years old today.
I got a couple basketball items, and then you have your piece on what's happening at Film in Memphis this week we'll talk about. One is Josh Giddey gets 4 years, $100 million. Your thoughts?
It seems about where that was going to land. I always thought, I think I expressed on the show, that there was going to be a multi-year deal done with Giddey. You know, they traded Alex Caruso to get him. He had a good season for them. He's young. Like, you sort of have to wrap him up. And I think that was probably a fair deal all around. It's sort of quality starter money. It's not all-star money. And that's sort of what he was last year. The problem with Josh Giddey, and there's a lot of good players who have this problem, is that he is a primary player skill set, but a secondary player talent. And so, like, he needs the ball to be his best self. But if he is the ball a lot, you know, like if one team is running the ball through Josh Giddey, the other is running the ball through Luka Doncic, you got to make up for that gap in a lot of other places, you know. And it's kind of the thing where if you're going to invest that much in that kind of player who's capped at that level, does that cap your team? And I think that's a struggle I think a lot of teams face. But, you know, in a vacuum, for the level of player he is at his age, I think it's a fair deal all around.
Who else is that, when you say that? Primary talent player.
Trae Young is a guy who jumped out to me, and maybe he's a higher level offensive talent than Josh Giddey, but he's always the kind of guy, because of his defensive deficiencies, I just think of as putting a cap on your team. Now, they got to a conference finals once with Trae Young, where things broke right. A lot of people think they have a really good team around him this year. They put a lot of size and defense around him. So maybe if you maximize it enough and you catch the right breaks, maybe you win with it, and maybe they will this season. But that's a guy. I mean, people wonder about that with Morant, with his shooting and with his defense. I mean, these are higher-level players than Josh Giddey. But it's the same kind of thing. If your lead ball handler is not like a top-10 player, can you really win big that way, you know?
Tyler Herro, another one.
Yeah, no, 100%, because he's a guy who can shift to the two if you have a better one, but he brings, like Trae Young, like immense defensive problems. And he is not an offense unto himself, I don't think, in the way you want your lead ball handler to be able to be.
A couple other things that have happened last couple weeks that I never asked you about, maybe Jeffrey did while I was away. One is Doris Burke has been demoted in favor of who, Jeffrey? Who was the...
Tim Legler.
Thoughts?
I tended to like both of those people. Legler more, I hear him like on podcasts and stuff.
Yep.
I'm not someone who like pays super close attention to the broadcasters, honestly. I just, to me, after a while, I just sort of don't really notice it. It's like, you know, the parents in a Peanuts cartoon. No offense to our friends who are broadcasters. But I find that there are a lot of people, sports fans and sports media people, who really have strong opinions about the broadcasters, and I mostly don't. I focus on the game. I just sort of, at some level, I'm not really paying attention to it that much, as consciously.
It's interesting. I notice it more with Pete and Brevin, partly because I hear them more, I guess, right?
So there's more of a like a familiarity, like you're hanging out with your friends kind of vibe to that than with the national broadcaster, I think.
And then something that I'm quite confident you don't have a strong opinion about, but this passed. We got a new All-Star game format with two U.S. teams and one world team, I think, round robin. You're not going to watch this either, are you?
I don't perceive like declining interest in the All-Star game as a desperate problem that must be solved. I think it's sort of natural. I think there's declining interest probably in the baseball All-Star game and like who nobody cares about the Pro Bowl and et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm fine with it just being whatever it is. And, like, let kids care about the dunk contest and, like, you know, let people care or not care. And I just don't see it as like this existential crisis for the NBA that All-Star weekend is not the most important thing. Like, I'm fine with the All-Star break being a break, personally.
Right. I think, I mean, in the end, you want it, given that it's going to happen, you do want it to be the most interesting format that they can come up with, in a crisis or not. But the real problem is the players make $100 million and don't care. Like, and whatever, it's not a real, like, and maybe they cared when they made, you know, whatever, and the, I don't know why they once cared.
I think it's a fiction that the All-Star game was ever good. I don't think the All-Star game's ever been good. I think one thing they can go back to is just putting the players in their own uniforms and then, like, right, you know, and then have an East-West. And then I've always maintained that the best part of All-Star games, this is baseball and basketball, is the introduction of the players. And they all come out and they're wearing their uniforms. You say, look at that. That's cool. There's the All-Stars. They're together. And then you can go watch something else.
You don't remember that year that Tom Chambers lit it up? And, yeah, I vaguely remember Tom.
I remember the one year where Dikembe Mutombo was playing defense in the last 3 minutes, and everyone thought this was great. But literally, you remember these 1 years, right?
Wasn't there a Mitch Richmond All-Star game in the 90s?
Clearly, there must have been a Mitch Richmond All-Star game. He's
there's so many.
Yeah.
When Magic Johnson came back, and, but that wasn't about the quality of the game. That was just Magic Johnson was out there playing, you know?
Let's see.
And so I just don't. I do think a lot of the fixes have made it worse instead of making it better. Like, just make it East versus West. I don't really see that. Whatever the problem is, it's not that. The problem is not that it's East versus West, you know?
I just want you to know that I just Googled Tom Chambers, All-Star MVP. And I don't know, there is a video entitled 1987 NBA All-Star Game, The Greatest Ever, Tom Chambers MVP. I'm going to have to look into the 1987. This is right my sweet spot. Tom Chambers All-Star Game. No, I'm with you. It's not an issue that needs solving. All right, you wrote about what's happening in film this week, and what is The Long Walk?
It's a new movie. It's an adaptation of the first novel Stephen King ever wrote, although it wasn't the first one that got published, and it's never been adapted until now. And it's, you know, it's one of these things that sort of, you know, sort of Hunger Games-esque kind of story. These things all, you know, I think evolved from the Shirley Jackson story, The Lottery. It's just dystopian, futuristic kind of thing. In this case, it's a walking contest among 50, you know, teenagers or young men. And the idea, I think, is you have to walk until there's only one of you still alive, and that person wins the contest. And that's sort of the premise of it.
Is it supposed to be good? You pointed out that there's been about a bazillion Stephen King films.
Yeah, and they're mostly bad. The early, you know, the movie hasn't come out yet, so not a lot of people have seen it. They don't do as many preview screenings. I used to go to preview screenings all the time. That doesn't happen in Memphis anymore. But some of the early buzz has been pretty positive on it. Yes.
So in the, you said there's two or three bad ones for every good one of the Stephen King.
Yeah.
Films. I haven't seen any of the three that you listed as good because they're scary. The Shining, Carrie, and The Dead Zone. Are they all good?
And the funny thing is Stephen King hates The Shining, like the Stanley Kubrick version of The Shining,
really?
Because it's sort of, I think, A, Stephen King has no aesthetic sense when it comes to visual mediums. I don't think he knows what's good and what's not in movies or television. And also, apparently, departs from, and I've read the book years ago when I went through the Stephen King phase and read, like, all the Stephen King up to a certain point. And I remember The Shining being maybe his best book, but I don't remember the details enough to know, like, there's apparently some change in, like, motivation or whatever from the book to the movie that he has issues with. But as an act of filmmaking, like, that's probably by far the best Stephen King thing. I mean, Stanley Kubrick in his prime.
I've certainly seen a lot of Carrie because it's everywhere, but I haven't seen.
Carrie's Brian De Palma, but that's also really good. That's Sissy Spacek early on.
Okay. We got a new Spinal Tap movie, Spinal Tap 2, The End Continues. The original Spinal Tap, 1984, and now we get the sequel.
Yeah, I mean, this is Spinal Tap is great, like a true classic. I don't, for whatever reason, I can't muster a lot of enthusiasm for this new one. If the word ends up being that it's pretty good, I might end up seeing it. my son saw This Is Spinal Tap for the first time when it, during the anniversary screenings last month or whenever. My wife took him to see that when I was in Memphis, I think.
Uh-huh.
So if he's interested in it, I will go see it. But in the absence of that, I don't know if I'm in a hurry to get to it. But I don't know. This Is Spinal Tap is great.
A couple others. Downton Abbey, the grand finale or grand finale. There's a Toy Story 30th anniversary. It's the Toy Story rescreen is screening there. But you wrote extensively about something called Pavements. What is this?
Yeah, so they're showing that at the Pink Palace. WYXR is partially sponsoring that, I think. And the lead singer for Pavement, Steve Malkmus. Pavement was a band in the 1990s, an indie rock band, probably arguably the best or most significant indie rock band of the 90s, and certainly if I had to name one band that like represented like my college experience, my wife's college experience, sort of our era, like it's that, definitely. But Steve Malkmus, the lead singer for Pavement, is coming to WYXR's Raised by Sound Festival. It's going to play, you know, solo stuff in December. So they're sponsoring this movie. It's a new documentary that came out earlier this year about the band, but it's kind of a mischievous documentary. It's not a straight documentary. Steve Malkmus co-wrote it. And it's sort of a meta commentary on the idea of a rock band and the things that like important rock bands get. And so it literally invents a biopic that it chronicles the making of, and it invents a jukebox stage musical that it chronicles the making of, and all kinds of other sort of postmodern kind of stuff.
And then finally, you obviously went to see Splitsville and liked it, and it's leaving Memphis theaters soon.
Yeah, it's a one and done in Memphis, 1 week. So if you want to see it in the theaters, you can do that today, Wednesday. Do that today and tomorrow. But then it'll be on streaming at some point. I think it's the funniest thing I've seen this year. Like,
Really?
It was very, very funny. And my wife and I were quoting it like afterwards. You know, it's a screwball comedy slash sex farce. And so, like, you know, if you have particularly prim tastes, it's probably not for you. But I thought it was very, very funny.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. Funniest thing I've seen all year. That's a high.
We don't make a lot of comedies.
No, that's true. I hate to say it. I'm occupied the next two nights, and then it's gonna. I'll put it on my Netflix list of things to look for when it comes out in streaming. Splitsville is the name of the film.
Just on record, like. This is Spinal Tap is like an all-time movie.
It is an all-time movie. Yeah, it's a great movie. It's a great movie. 1984.
Yeah. It's still hilarious.
It is still hilarious. If you're selling your house, Josh Hysaw would be the person to call. Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty. We've talked extensively about what a tricky market it is right now and about how you're probably being besieged by robocalls, emails, texts, asking you if you want to sell your home, and they got an instant cash offer for you. It may be tempting, honestly, given where we are as a market right now, but don't do it. If that's the way you want to go, and again, there's reasons to do it. You don't have to spend money fixing up your house. You don't have to showings. You don't, you know, go through all that nonsense, the suspense, all of that. Call Josh Hysaw and the team at Keller Williams Realty, because he's not, you know, from some far-flung place. He's a local realtor and does the same thing, but will give you a full price offer for your home. Lots of people at this point, and some like, oh, is he really not going to lowball me? And I've talked to people who have been very, very, very happy with their experience with Josh Hysaw and doing exactly this. Go to joshhasthebuyers.com, get in touch, and Josh will come out and will tell you what your home is worth, give you a full price offer for your home. And we'll then give you 4 months to hand over the keys. Simple as that. It's joshhasthebuyers.com. We're going to come back, play Believe It or Not. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
670 The Score's Mullin Haugh is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haugh Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Leaders Credit Union is my bank, and it should be your bank. because it's great, honestly. And I really mean that. The technology is terrific. And then the interactions that I've had with the folks over there couldn't be more helpful. So much now, it's just hard to get in touch with people to actually talk to a real human being. If you want to walk into a Leader's Branch, you can do that in Arlington. They got a brand new branch. They've got a brand new branch in Bartlett. I've talked to the mortgage folks on the phone, incredibly helpful. You can download the technology. And again, Leaders Credit Union, because it's a credit union, doesn't have stockholders who have to be happy, doesn't have people that don't have to pay a dividend. All the money goes right back into better service, better technology, and better rates. So whether you're looking for a mortgage, whether you're looking for a car loan, want a new checking account, whatever it is, give Leaders a try. LeadersCU.com/ESPN. Jeffrey, let's play Believe It or Not. All right, Jeffrey, justice was served in the great Jalen Carter spitting fiasco.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I do believe that. He basically gets suspended a game. He gets docked a game check. Like,
He was suspended a game without pay, and the game was the game that he already missed. And part of the logic is he didn't play a single play.
Right.
I do wonder if... if you had been, if the spitting had happened two plays in, would have been a different rule. Like at what point, and by the way, previous spitting incidents were not suspension. They were just fines.
Correct.
So now you've got spitting producing a suspension. But can you spit halfway through the first quarter? And does that then count as because you missed most of the game? Is there a bright line here, or is it?
Is it like targeting? If the spitting happens in the second half, should you be suspended for the first half of the next game?
Maybe what it is we don't need to decide where the line is. All we know is if it does happen before a single play from scrimmage, that will count as a full game.
Well, the good news is, Jeff, you and I don't have to debate and don't have to determine it because we have the commish. Roger Goodell, who is one of the most all-knowing, benevolent human beings we've ever known, he knows what's best.
He does know we trust the commish. And they play the Chiefs this week.
Yeah, no, I think everybody was kind of in favor of that.
And they play the Chiefs this week. Now, the true conspiracy theorist might say, no. What the league really wants is the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, Taylor Swift at halftime. They need that to happen, and so they're going to suspend Jalen Carter. For this game against the Chiefs. They did not do that.
Yeah, no, I thought most people would say if the NFL is hashtag rigged, he would be suspended against the Chiefs so that the Chiefs
don't start 0-2. I mean, this is not a Bills show. Although, let's be honest, you got to bear with me here. It's not a Bills show. The Bills could be two games up on the Chiefs after this week, although it is interesting.
I'm a little nervous about the Bills this week.
I am too. That's what I was about to say. You know what the Jets are? They're Ravens light.
I was going to say they are going to be able to run a similar game plan.
They are 100%. What do they got? They have what do the Ravens have? Let's see. They've got a quarterback who's unbelievably athletic, elusive, whatever. Bingo. Can make you challenge you at all. You know.
Yep.
And what do the Jets have?
A dynamic running game.
So the first thing they have is they have that quarterback, and the Jets have that quarterback. The next thing the Ravens have is they've got an unbelievably dynamic running game, and what do the Jets have? It appears, honestly, that they've got a dynamic running game, including they're relying on it. Like they rushed the ball 39 times to 22 throws against the Steelers. I think, and they've got. Now, mind you, they lost one of their first round picks on the first on the offensive line to injury. They got two more, including the tackle from Missouri, who's been awesome. They have a big, strong offensive line. They've got a receiver, much like the Ravens do, who can go crazy.
Yep.
And they've got a quarterback who's going to give you fits. And the Bills proved they couldn't stop the Ravens.
Now, the only thing I will say is. Derrick Henry's not there. I mean, I think Allen's a good back. I think Hall's a good back. But, like,
No, no, it's not Derrick Henry. It's interesting. Sean McDonough said that they asked him how he normally watches tape.
Wait, McDonough or McDermott?
Oh, sorry, McDermott. Sean McDermott. Sean McDonough is a totally different human being.
Yes.
Sean McDermott.
Both bald.
Both unappreciated.
Yes, agreed.
Said that he...
McDonough.
He watched the special teams and offensive tapes first because he wanted to just get through them and get to the defense where he could roll up his sleeves. Because it was a mess. It was absolutely a mess.
He but wanted to make sure he had time.
If you're just going by who's going to... Who's favored in the Chiefs Eagles game?
I would think the let's guess. It's in Kansas City, right? I'm going to say Eagles minus 3. Let's see.
In Kansas City?
I think it's in Kansas City because they opened on the road.
They opened at home on the road. That was a home game for the Chiefs.
No, it was technically a Chargers half game, and then the Chargers fans went nuts because they painted the end zone.
Oh, you're right.
Split.
No, you're right.
It was a split. But they gave up a home game to have that game.
That's right.
It is Philly minus a point and a half.
Philly minus a point and a half.
But it is in Kansas City.
Arrowhead.
Yes.
If you just go by who's supposed to win, the Chiefs could be literally two games behind the
Then on top of that, let's see, the Chargers go to Vegas on Monday night, and then who do the Broncos have?
I don't think Vegas is, with all due respect to John Martin, I don't think the
Denver goes at Indianapolis. I mean, right now both the Chargers and Broncos are favored to win.
Given that we're talking about those teams, here you go. Ready? The old quarterback in a new place who will emerge as the biggest success story this year. In other words, a quarterback who's been replanted somewhere else, who will emerge as the biggest success story this year, is Daniel Jones.
All right, so let's go through. We've got
You got Geno.
Geno in Vegas, Darnold in Seattle.
Daniel Rogers, Jones in India. Yeah, Justin Fields.
Rogers in Pittsburgh, Fields with the Jets, DJ with the Colts.
I think that's it. Isn't that it?
I don't think Daniel's that bad.
I didn't say he's not that bad. I said
I've been here.
I said the quarterback.
I think the Colts roster.
The quarterback who is replanted.
I know.
Who will emerge.
I believe
as
it.
The, you believe that?
I believe it.
You believe that?
Daniel took an insane amount of crap because he's the starting quarterback for the Giants. And the reality was he got paid before Saquon was, because his contract was up. And so people hold that against him. He's not that bad.
There's a difference between not that bad and will be. Now, what's interesting is,
but they've had bad quarterback play the last 2 years, and they've been close to the playoffs.
I'm comparing it to how Geno is going to do in Las Vegas, and how Aaron Rodgers is going to do in Pittsburgh, and how Justin Fields is going to do in New York, and how Sam Darnold is going to do.
I think the Colts have a better roster
than any of those teams.
I'm not as high on the Pittsburgh roster. Like, I think that defense is getting old fast.
I do think, in terms of what's the most surprising, success, people didn't even think Daniel Jones was going to win the job.
Yeah.
Right? So, in terms of the success story that would be the most surprising, Justin Fields continuing to play efficiently and well.
Well, Justin Fields is finally in a spot that's like actually asking him to play quarterback like he's supposed
to be playing quarterback. Yeah.
Yes.
Right. So the most surprising, though, would be, I mean, let's be honest, there's a reason there are new teams. People, to one degree or another, I think particularly with Fields, Rodgers, and Daniel Jones, for one reason or another, they'd all been written off.
Yes.
Right? Daniel Jones, right? Because everything that happened with the Giants.
Yes.
And sure, he had a quick car wash through Minnesota, but whatever. He'd been written off, and people didn't even think he was getting the job. Aaron Rodgers, because of the disaster that the Jets became,
and his age, and he's ill, whatever else,
he'd been written off. Justin Fields, come on, man. If he was any good, he'd still be in Pittsburgh, right?
Fine.
People to cross off the Chicago experience,
yep.
But if he was any good, he'd still be in Pittsburgh.
They went to Russell.
Those three had been written off. I don't think Geno and Sam Darnold had been written off. They'd been, their teams decided they were not worth what they wanted.
Correct.
And we could do just as well for cheaper. Obviously, In Minnesota, they thought they had the future there, yep. and so they didn't need Sam Darnold there. And in Seattle, they're like, yeah, we could get Sam Darnold. It'll be just as good as Geno. We can get it cheaper.
By the way, we are monitoring if Sam Darnold's back.
He may be back to being bad.
He might. It might just be Kevin O'Connell is like the quarterback whisperer.
So, but it is interesting. It'll be interesting because to one degree or another,
they all are like, okay.
Four out of five of them, I don't think you'd say Sam Darnold had a successful debut.
I mean, he took his team down there. He ran into his tackle.
That's true. But four of them certainly
had. We had a second butt fumble.
Four of them certainly had impressive.
It didn't catch on.
It didn't catch on. Four of them certainly had impressive debuts, right, with their new team. And
yes.
It bears watching.
I'm proud of you. It took you 48 hours to be scared of the Jets.
Terrified.
I'm very proud of you. That's a new record.
Ja'Cory Kroski Merritt, Bill, is going to be the rookie of the year.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make yes. a difference, that can yes. get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he is here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
Okay, I have a serious question. Is JJ eligible? Because remember, like, Chet wins Rookie of the Year. Oh. Like, I don't know, because he didn't play a game last year.
That's an interesting question. The Google will answer.
Yeah, is your AI?
Win Rookie of the Year. Like, if the spitting, if when you don't play a single...
Okay, he's not, according to Florio.
Well, then, who are you going to trust?
Well, Flores also a Vikings fan.
Is not eligible for Offensive Rookie of the Year.
The NFL rules define a rookie for award purposes as a player who is in their first professional season playing in the major leagues. Okay. I'm still going to say no, because I think to be a running back and to win Rookie of the Year, you're going to have ungodly amounts of carries, and I still think that he's just not going to have that many. I still think I would rather have Genty, even though I know Ashton didn't have a big rushing performance on Sunday. I also think the Patriots are designed to stop the run.
How about Hampton, Omarion Hampton?
You want to talk pure carries?
He got 15 carries in his first game, 48 rushing yards. I mean, there's no question, Bill is leading the way. How about this one, Tyler Warren? I've been going back to Danny Dimes here. How about Tyler Warren? Massive first game.
So the biggest thing that surprised me about Daniel was not him playing well. It was
thrown to tight ends.
Correct. He's never done that. Now, part of the reason he never did that is because we never had any good ones. Now that he has a good one, maybe that's a difference maker. I just think the Colts are. I don't think they're that bad.
But again,
in that division, there is so winnable.
There is a difference between being not that bad and being, is it going to be Rookie of the Year? We're trying to identify the Rookie of the Year. How about Cam Ward?
I think they're so bad that he's going to struggle to put up numbers.
How about a receiver? There's a certain receiver in Tampa who had a great first game.
Back Abuka.
Uh-huh.
I still think they're probably going to spread it. I still like Genty just because volume.
I think Bill's going to win.
All right. They're going to be he's on the best offense. There's no question about that.
He is electric, too.
Yes.
Like, he is absolutely.
He is that classic, like, why was this guy drafted
right,
so late?
100%. He is absolutely electric. I mean, this week will be interesting because you've got the Packers and the Commanders. And one of the things that was striking about the Detroit game wasn't, you know, people, there was a lot of focus on the pass rush. Like, what was that going to be like with Micah, right?
Yep.
But the concern had been they're giving up their nose tackle.
Yep.
Are they going to stop the run?
Yep.
It was Detroit's worst running game in like 2 years. Like, they absolutely.
But what's the best way to neutralize a dominant defensive line? A quarterback that can avoid it.
Well, that
game's fascinating to me. on a Thursday
night. I will be really interested to see. Yes, I think that game's fascinating to me. That's true.
Because I do have the Packers on Holy Cow Watch.
We have, in terms of great games this week, we got the Packers and the Commanders Thursday.
Yep. So Sunday we've got
the Eagles and the Chiefs is like just a
midday
Sunday,
give me a quick 1-10 rating. So we have Commanders, Green Bay Thursday night.
That's a nine and a half.
Jags at Bengals.
I'm intrigued by that. That to me is a seven. Yeah. That's a seven.
Giants at Cowboys.
By the way, we didn't include Travis Hunter as a rookie of the year candidate.
They were trying to get him the ball.
Not big numbers, though.
No, I've also decided, I said this on yesterday's show, I think the Trevor Lawrence stat line is like 19 of 31 for 200, a touchdown and a pick. It's like every time I look up, I see that's his numbers.
Okay, so next game you were telling me?
Giants at Cowboys.
Let's be honest, it's only intriguing for when is Jackson Dart going to play?
Yeah, if
the
Russ,
only thing
the only thing that's intriguing about is if Russ looks bad for a half,
if he gets pulled,
yeah.
or hurt, that's the only thing that's interesting.
But it's a bad game. I have it as a three.
It's a bad,
and this is my
it's
team.
It's a two.
Bears at Lions.
That's a very interesting game. That's a seven.
Both teams really need a win.
No, that's a very interesting game.
The Rams.
Oh, plus you got the return. That's an 8 or 9.
There's narrative.
You got narrative. You got power. The power of narrative there. Yeah.
Rams at Titans. Titans home opener.
Rams at Titans has very little intrigue. That's a three.
Cam
just because it's the Titans.
I was also going to say Cam against that defensive line. Pray for my boy. Could be the
thoughts and prayers.
Could it be the sad bowl of the AFC East? New England at Miami.
Yeah, that's
how it's like. How sad are the Dolphins?
The other thing I was going to ask you was, is Tyreek Hill going to end up a Chief?
Can they make that work?
Evidently, there's money. The money they can make. They can make it work. Now he's got a domestic violence.
I was going to say,
do the Chiefs really need to be?
Now, granted, that would be a safe space for him.
It would be a safe space for him.
Criminals welcome.
They have on the staff and elsewhere.
Yes.
And so,
well, and they're down one right now,
and they're down a criminal.
They're
right?
suspended
they're
one right now. Yeah,
one suspended right now, and so they don't have a lot of the depth that they
yes,
used to have.
Correct
there. So that's a possible. In terms of the Miami one, there is no question that the loser of that game, I mean, a total disaster.
Oh yeah, and at least with with New England, you can talk yourself into
yeah,
like
it would be worse for the Dolphins,
right?
In many ways, more helpful for the Dolphins because maybe they will learn that they. I mean, at what point does McDaniel get fired?
Well, that was so. Tim Murray posed this question yesterday: if you had to bet which guy gets fired first in Florida, Napier or Mike McDaniel?
Napier.
So Napier's got the five games coming up.
He's got a tough schedule coming up.
Correct. So you've got LSU, Miami, A&M.
I think
the Georgia game's in there.
I think Napier gets
fired. Okay, that's what I said too. Because I also think Stephen Ross is one of those guys that doesn't.
You just hang in there and let the damage happen.
He doesn't really like paying guys to not work. So the next,
but you also don't need to get a jump on recruiting or anything else. You can
correct.
Just go with.
So the next, here are the, good God. At LSU, at Miami, bye week, Texas at home, at A&M, Mississippi State, which is not going to be as easy as we thought, and then Georgia.
Yeah, he's going to get fired first.
That's what I said.
Okay, keep going through the schedule here.
We now go to. San Francisco at New Orleans.
Very little intrigue there. That's a
assuming Brocken doesn't play. That's up there with the Giants and Cowboys.
Yeah, if Brock doesn't play, it's a two.
We know
Spencer
you won't
Rattler
be.
Actually, wasn't bad.
This one has to be a zero for Jeff because he won't be able to watch it because he's already talked himself into the Jets being a real threat. We've got the
Chuck's
Bills
game
at Jets.
Is a, let's be honest. Just if I was grading objectively, I still think it's a seven because Josh Allen is playing and are the Jets interesting?
I totally agree.
Right.
Well, and this is historically a game.
And the Bills always struggle with the Jets.
Yeah. Seattle at Pittsburgh.
I mean, that's a.
To me, like, that's the ultimate. That's like the baseline. I would watch it.
It's an NFL game.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers is there. There's some interesting things.
It's good enough.
Good enough. It's an NFL.
Yeah.
It's an NFL game that's not a dog.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. 3:05 window. We've got Denver at Indy.
That's a 6.5, 7.
I'm also on Bo. I'm on Bo is who I thought.
Going to be really disappointed.
Bo is who I thought he was.
This was supposed to be a year when they fixed their offense.
Uh-huh. I've got it flagged.
So you have two teams there. Obviously, Denver won, but not in impressive fashion. Indy caught our attention.
Yes.
So what's happening here?
Correct. This is tough. Carolina at Arizona.
That's
at the bottom.
That's a 2.
That is good thing that that's at 3:05.
That's a dog.
Then we have Philly at Kansas City.
That's a tremendous game. That's a 9.
And then our Sunday night game is Atlanta at Minnesota. So this could have been the Kirk Cousins Bowl, but
oh yeah, it's
Penix for it's Penix versus JJ. It's the draft class. Well, it seems like all we keep doing is re-ranking the
young quarterbacks against
correct.
The quarterback. I mean, it's not as interesting as the one we just saw, is it?
It's not even as interesting as the 3:25 game.
But it's a perfectly good game. Good game. 6.5.
I think I'd rather see Chicago and Detroit in Sunday night football.
I think that was more interesting.
And then we have a doubleheader on Monday night. Tampa Bay at Houston. What if the Texans are like not good?
It's funny because they were ranking head coaches in the league as I was driving in on Unsportsmanlike.
Yeah.
They were ranking head coaches, and the question I think Greeny had said is Kevin O'Connell number one in a head coach?
God,
draft.
I love the NFL's the best. What an overreaction!
Well, that's what they said. They said, "Come on, man, you can't do that." Like he's even if you were going to go coaches who haven't won a title category, do you not have to go Harbaugh?
Oh, so this is what's interesting.
Even if you were doing that,
I'm a Shanny guy. Would I take Kevin O'Connell over Shanny now?
Yeah, I mean, Shanny has as the stat they used as many double digit loss seasons as playoff. Like, yeah, he's got some bad stuff.
That
on
also
his
means he has really good offenses because he builds leads.
And of course, no one mentions Sean McDermott. Period. Like, no one. And it's they're like, well, he's got Josh Allen. In fairness, he didn't have. He got there before Josh Allen. He gets some credit. He's not an offensive guy. He gets some credit for Josh Allen. It's like
he's the only team that's won
Josh
their division
Allen.
More times in a row.
And again,
is it the Chiefs?
I don't think he's some genius either. I wouldn't pick him over Kevin O'Connell. But the culture building, the consistency, you can't deny that. And then they were like, if you were going. But then if you're going championship division, you just can't. You got to, I mean, Sean McVay, you would take over.
I'm still taking Andy Reid.
You're taking Andy Reid more than any best of all, right?
Yeah, Andy Reid's my 1-1.
So, yes, you can't do that. But
D'Amico is a good coach.
But D'Amico is, what was interesting is 2 years ago, he would have been the Kevin O'Connell of, again, he's a defensive guy, not an offensive guy. But he was the upcoming genius, going to be a tremendous coach. And now they're struggling. I don't necessarily.
Because they can't block.
I don't put it at the feet. Yeah, because they can't block.
I mean, what? They gave up like 14 points this week?
They decided to solve their offensive line problems by getting rid of their best
offensive
line.
And then we have a Monday night doubleheader. Chargers at Raiders to open the, or to close out the Monday night.
That's a good one. It's a good 6.5, 7. It's good.
I can already tell this is peak Herbert season.
All right, there you go. Here's one for you.
Right.
You are stunned that not only is Cracker Barrel bringing back the logo, they have now paused their renovations. I'm a little surprised. I thought it was just going to
bring back
the old man.
No, I think they're going to do the overreaction of
we're
going to bring it all back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just want the tee game back, the golf tee game.
The golf tee game?
Yeah, it's like they have like 9 golf tees and you have to like finish with one.
Oh, here's one. Well, we're running out of time. You are heartened and you encouraged by the U.S. men's national soccer team and their victory last night.
I'm neither. I did watch. I want to be clear.
You actually watched
it? I watched because, Jeff, there was not a lot on last night.
U.S. 2, Japan 0. And let's be honest, everyone doesn't follow soccer as closely as I do.
Of course.
So you may not know that against South Korea, it was the 4-2-3-1. It just didn't work for him, right?
The formation, no.
And here,
that's a playoff model, too.
Here they switched to the 3-4-3, and you saw what you saw. Like, to me, it's about adjustments, man.
Big 12 offense.
Now, it's a friendly, obviously, and South Korea wasn't playing all their best players, and I understand that.
We played Japan last night.
What?
We played Japan last night.
Japan, that's what I meant. South Korea was Sunday. Japan didn't play their best players.
Correct.
But I knew that. You don't have to tell me
that.
But the 3-4-3 was magic.
Yeah, no. I bet we still finished 16th.
What did you see since you watched?
We had our better players playing. That was nice. Someone needs to get a hold of the Pulisic media machine, and whoever's in charge needs to be fired.
He said there's not as much drama as you like to think about.
Yeah, but also they are coming across not like they think they're defending each other and they come across as like spoiled brats.
Aaron Judge hit 359, fifth in Yankees history.
Does this mean we're going to have to break in on Saturdays?
Two more and he'll pass DiMaggio.
Okay.
Kyle Schwarber got 50, just the second person in Phillies history. Ryan Howard.
I mean, Kyle might win the MVP.
Juan Soto, first 30-30 of the year.
Yeah, and remember when everyone was panicked? Like, remember when they were breaking out, like, how many hits, how much each hit was worth?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Early season. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
This was coming up next on Jason and John. Coach Hurd's going to join the program. He'll also stick around and join me for Jeffrey Wright and company. It's Wednesday, so that means Cobb will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
All right, we got to get out of here. Back tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everybody. For now, our work is done.
670 The Score's Mullin Haw is where Chicago starts their day with Bears Talk from 5:30 till 10 a.m.
For Ben Johnson, coaching Caleb Williams, you formulate what you want to do into what he can do.
They got the guy who can scheme guys open, who will make a difference, that can get people to think that they're better than they are. Ben Johnson schematically makes you think the Bears will be better as long as he's here.
If you missed it live, listen to The Score's Mullin Haw Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.